At a university or?
No, in grade school.
Oh, in grade school.
Well, this doesn't have as much meaning in a colonial society as it would elsewhere. He was self-educated in ways that he felt necessary. He was well-read and widely read in both Asian and European cultures. Now that self-education was very pragmatically determined. He had no scholarly bent. He wasn't interested in scholarship. He used ideology as a communicational instrument. He himself became the message. Ho was highly intelligent, gifted in language, an effective writer who used writing solely to motivate. He did not write for the ages. And he was talented considering his purposes. But virtually all of his Vietnamese writings are intentionally transitory. They're designed for use one time, one place, to shape a perception. At another time, he would write something else, maybe the opposite, for another purpose. Very narrowly designed to shape a perception, inculcate an attitude, persuade a course of action here and now. His writings were fairly flavorful, but they were largely devoid of much intellectual content. Let me read you two of his most famous quotes. This was about 1923. Behind the mask of democracy, France has transplanted to Annam, that is roughly Vietnam, an entire cursed medieval regime. The Annamese, or South Vietnamese, peasant has been crucified on the bayonet of a capitalist civilization on the cross of a prostituted Christianity. Now that's very powerful in French, and it's very powerful in France, to not only to the left, but to the whole. It's largely meaningless to a peasant in Vietnam who doesn't really know what the cross of prostituted Christianity is or what a cursed medieval regime is. But these are virtue terms or letter words that psychologists use. In French, they have very powerful, effective meaning. And another one on the death of Lenin, which this has been used in communist writings all over the world. Lenin is dead. This news struck the people like a bolt from the blue. It spread to every corner of the fertile plains of Africa and the green fields of Asia. It doesn't say anything other than Lenin is dead. Even if you didn't like Lenin, you might say this. But the point is, this again was written at a particular time for a particular audience. He ran a newspaper in Paris called Pariah, the Pariah, and much of the writing we have, we know about him, we think he wrote. Some of them it had his name on, we don't think he wrote. There are ways, you know, you can do pronoun studies with a computer to determine if two pieces of writing were done, but probably done with the same person or not. And some of these have come out very badly. But, as I say, he did not write for the ages. His works were affective and inspirational, and I think effective at the time. In retrospect, they strike us as being very banal and pedestrian. But that's not really a fair test. It wasn't his intention. Any criticism of writing has to begin. The only responsibility you have to, as a critic of writing, is to say, what is this person writing about? What is their intention in this writing? Did they write a musical comedy? Well, then it's not grand opera, and it's unfair to criticize it as being not being grand opera. What was their intention? And he had very specific and well thought out intention. He also wrote poetry, and he also wrote in French. His writings in French, according to French scholars, were set down with great verve and precision. And it was superior, they say, to many French whose many who wrote in whose mother tongue was French. I've tried to find from Vietnamese scholars how good was his poetry. And political judgments tend to enter in here. Some of them say his poetry is bad. It was so bad it's kind of a black joke. It's a satire on Confucian scholarship. Others say, well, it's about equal to the average poetry of the Tang Dynasty, which it resembles. And you say, how about modern? Well, we don't really have any such a thing as good modern poetry today, in Vietnamese, they say. So, it's one of these things you try to pursue, but you finally give up. His translations into English of his poetry strikes me as being quite good. I mean, it's a workmanship. I don't know that that matters very much. It's just a kind of clue as to the guy, what more we can think about him. He was a master of language. We're not sure who, how much, but he spoke well or moderately well Vietnamese, French, Cantonese, Mandarin, English, Russian, Japanese, German, and Czech, if not the 20 other languages that he reportedly mastered. In most of these, I'm not sure about the German or the Czech. I have talked to natives who spoke to him in these other languages, mostly Chinese and Russian, and they say it was good. Heavy accent, but completely understandable. All right, the fifth and perhaps the most important characteristic of Ho's genius was as an organizer. This is a thesis I have written about some times and have been roundly attacked by academics for this. What was her name? Can't think of it. It's a traumatic Freudian block. Her father was in the CIA, and she was very anti-CIA. And I'll think of it. Shouldn't really tell you because she really goes after me. Organization, that's nonsense. He was an ideologue. That's what made Ho the genius that he was. And I say, prove it. Anyway, this is my thesis, and you maybe should take it with a grain of salt or as one perception of the competing perceptions of the Vietnam War. I see Ho really as a genius, as an organizer. He was one of the world's first modern great organizational man. His advent was well timed, again perhaps a stroke of luck, for he appeared as the world was entering the age of organization. And we definitely live in an age of organization. And this is where Leninism versus Marxism, I think, is the relevant. He used Leninism and the techniques of Leninism in his organizational efforts. Leninism basically is a means of organizing, mobilizing, motivating societies. It's not necessarily communist. The Taiwanese government, KMT, was a Leninist society in everything except it was militantly anti-communist. But it's applicable, and techniques are applicable in any society and have been used all over the world. And Ho saw those values and studied the process very carefully and emulated it. He was not, as far as anybody can tell, and I would challenge, what's her name? To prove this, that Marxism is what motivated and made him tick. Marxism is a political philosophy, as you may know. It's a way of interpreting history. It's an economic theory. Supposedly, its most important value is as interpreting history. If you master Marxism, you are infallible in interpreting historical phenomena. There used to be a lot of people in Moscow who really believed that, I guess. You can't find many of them anymore. It depends on where you are on this scale of how to interpret leadership and leaders in history.
So you would say, whereas Marxism, in the way you're describing it, Marxism is a philosophy, Leninism has code.
Well, it's several things. It's a tool for interpreting history. That's not really a philosophy. It is a philosophy also. And it's also a religion. It's an icon on the wall that you go out and fight and die for. You don't have to understand it. And very few of the Vietnamese from the north that went south and died, and those that didn't die, and I talked to, said the same thing. Yeah, I would say to them, are you a communist? Yes. You member of the party? Yes. You have a party card? Yes. Well, tell me, do you believe the history of hitherto existing societies is a history of the class conflict? And you either get the answer, hey, I don't know what that means, or yes, I think it's sometimes true, maybe not always true, but how about the dialectical materialism? How about religion, the opiate of the people? You just tick off all the tenets of Marxism, and you get the same answer. I don't understand it. Say, well, then how did you, to those that say that, you say, how did you get into the party? You had to pass a test to get in. Yeah, well, I had to pass a test. The cadre that examined me told me in advance what the questions would be and what the answers would be. And I say, and you don't think that's unethical? No. You do not have to know anything about communism to be a good communist. So I'm writing a book at this time on Vietnamese communism, and I walk away. My notes say, is this guy a communist or isn't he? He says he is, willing to fight and die for it, but I say he isn't, because he doesn't begin to understand it. I go home, my wife says, it's like the Catholics. They don't know anything about Catholicism somewhere, but they believe in it. That's what's important, the belief. Well, it makes it a little hard when you're writing political science that way. I don't mean to get off the track here. Did I hear a question or comment? Snide comment, maybe? Yeah. Anyway, from the earliest days, I think, as a Leninist, he was very much preoccupied, Ho was very much preoccupied with social organization and that whole class of knowledge in our society now, social dynamics. The whole business of committees and cells, united fronts, clandestine political activities. In organizational work, he made his greatest contribution. Lenin was very good at this too, and he was a model of it. But I think generally most writers would say that Ho's greatest contribution, clearly and officially, was recognized during his life and later. A party assessment of Ho's political concepts listed 8 lessons taught by Ho. The first was his construction of the party, and 6 of the remaining contributions had to do with facets of organizational work. As I say, I think most of his biographers agree on this. He could form, mold, merge, and slay organizations with consummate skill. He raised to a high art the technique of eliminating an enemy or a rival organization by drowning it in a larger organization. The Viet Minh was very much an example. It was a united front. A front is, I think I've said, is an organization of organizations. It is a collaboration among many different organizations who are united for a single purpose. The most famous of these is the United Front in Europe, Western Europe or anti-German Europe in the years running up to the World War II. We will form here in Britain and France and elsewhere a united front, and with the Soviet Union too, to stop Hitler. That's our objective, to stop Hitler. All you organizations, we don't care whether you're left wing, right wing, religious, non-religious, if you want to stop Hitler, join us in the effort. One of the organizations is the Communist Party. This doesn't mean you like us or we get along on other issues. Doesn't mean it's permanent. When the war is over, we'll go back to what we were doing before. But this is a united front purpose for a single movement for a single purpose. Probably the greatest political invention of the 20th century, I would say. Lenin invented it. Anyway, what Ho was able to do was to bring these organizations into a kind of amorphous united front as the Viet Minh, and then use that essence to drown those organizations or smother them so that they didn't have much influence within. Particularly if there was one outside that really challenged him, he would try to bring it in and smother it. And this was, you know, not done clandestinely. The people in it knew what he was trying to do. I think most of them thought they could outthink him at it. A lot of the Buddhists thought that, I think. But anyway, it worked very well. And so, as part of this contribution, he used the art of clandestinism in politics, which we've talked about, with unequaled cleverness. He was meticulous in the uses of secrecy. He was nearly flawless in his choice of associates, unrivaled in his ability to recruit, organize, train, and direct professional revolutionaries. He was an organizational unifier and repairman. Twice he rebuilt the party from the ground up. Now that ability, I argue, overshadows all others. He was first and foremost an organizer. Second, an activist, and at a distant third, he was a strategist. In his lifetime, he formed 17 major organizations, nearly half of them the most difficult type to create, the Front Organization.
What was second?
Second was an activist, political activist.
Was an organization, though, simply a means of strategy?
Yeah, it is a form of strategy, but it's a different activity in your day-to-day activities. Strategy is making use of organization, I guess. Organization is one facet. Others is leadership, in military terms, it's a whole series of things. Tactics and so on. Now, organization is a much narrower concept. Consistently, Ho demonstrated his skills in mediating internal disputes, with the result that the party in Vietnam had greater internal unity than any communist party in the world. It was the only ruling party, communist party, that was never decimated at some time or another by a full-scale purge. In a world of organizations, Ho could act wisely under tremendous pressure. He could assess a group dynamic situation with lightning speed, and he was able almost instinctively to locate the jugular vein in an enemy organization, as he certainly did with the enemy organizations in South Vietnam and the enemy organizations in the United States. Now, there are those who say that the men of his organization were all third-raters, that Ho had arranged it this way, and hence he was bound to appear superior in comparison to those around him. There is some merit, I think, in this. Only Von Minh Giap, of all his compatriots who survived, seems to bear some kind of a mark of genius. But the fact remains that his organizational accomplishments are impressive and absolute in not only relative terms. A second raider surrounded by third raiders could simply not have succeeded as he did. He created an efficient, well-disciplined, strongly unified movement of the type that could operate under adverse conditions in Indochina for decades while he was directing it from the outside. The structure he built was largely free of debilitating personal feuds and self-seeking, which destroyed the nationalist groups, his competitors, and which in the end destroyed the South Vietnamese government or system. It was an organization in which he could be all things to all men, a patriotic, nationalistic, xenophobic, proletarian, internationalistic. He could appeal to peasants who wanted land, to intellectuals of searching for an idealistic cause, to Vietnamese demanding dignity or revenge, at which every necessary point he could convert Marxism and Leninism into the realities of the Vietnamese social revolution. And it was impressively manned by a dedicated and courageous cadre corps who were able to maintain great suppleness in tactics without deviating in pursuit of the final goal. I'll say more about this later, but it wasn't just Ho, the individual, it was the cadre structure within the party and within the state, actually, that that was the instrument of this organization, mobilization, and motivation. They were really superior individuals. I don't know how he managed to single out the gold from the dross. You can never figure that out in South Vietnam. We had pretty much the same mix, I think, of good and bad, but couldn't separate them. I don't want to give you the wrong impression. Whatever he was, Ho Chi Minh was not a nice guy. He knew that in Vietnam, nice guys don't simply finish last. They don't even finish. So he committed many ruthless acts during his life, merciless acts. And he did it, he would have explained if you asked him, because he had to. There are examples of this, because the history is so murky, we're not too sure how complete these truths are, but he reportedly sold out Phan Voi Chau, who was the George Washington of Vietnam, sold him out to the French Sûreté, gave them his picture, and told him he was in Shanghai, and they could get the British to arrest him, which they did, and they locked him up. He sent Sûreté names and photos of infiltrating cadres that he wanted to get rid of to those who went to China. The story is that every cadre agent he sent abroad, he had two photos, and if he didn't like what the guy was doing, or if he feared him as a possible challenge to his authority, he would send this to the Sûreté, and they would obligingly see that the guy was arrested, and in most cases sent off to Madagascar, where apparently some of them are still living to this day.
So he used the French secret police as his secret police?
Well, it wasn't really, he didn't have a secret police. What he had was a list of names and addresses. The great challenge to the Marxists, or the Stalinists, I guess more correctly, in Vietnam in the 1930s, were the Trotskyites, another brand of communism. I think you probably know Trotsky was Stalin's great bête noir, whom he had shot in Mexico City eventually. But the Trotskyites were much stronger than the communists, the Stalinists, because the Stalinists were under the Moscow orders to get along with the hated Cologne because of the United Front in Europe, stop Hitler, which made sense in Europe, but it didn't make any sense at all in Vietnam. So the Trotskyites really moved up in terms of image, and Ho wasn't around any of this time. He didn't have to explain it. But the day that war was declared, this is apparently a well-grounded story, somebody sent the Sûreté in Saigon a list of every Trotskyite cadre in Vietnam. and the French promptly scarfed up everybody, whether they were or not, I guess, and shipped them off to Madagascar. Trotskyites, I guess, have never forgiven Ho for this. And then there's the betrayal of the Southern cadres during the Vietnam War, the betrayals of the Viet Cong, which we're still trying to sort out. That wasn't Ho, really, because Ho was dead when this happened, but it was a continuation of this organizational struggle for power. The point of which is that Ho was a brutal person, and that's not really a pejorative term, it's simply a statement of fact. General Giap is the one that scarfed up all the nationalists in Hanoi in 1945 in the August Revolution. This apparently was done without clearing it with Ho, but I think that was Ho's story afterwards, because I think he didn't do anything like that. Giap wouldn't do anything like that without Ho's clearance. But it really cut the head off the Dai Viets and QDD. Anyway, I guess the point of this is Ho Chi Minh has a very negative image among many South Vietnamese, Southern Vietnamese, non-communist Vietnamese. On the other hand, he has a very superior image abroad, in the North, and he has abroad. A couple of years ago, UNESCO made him a century, Man of the Century honor. So, what then is to be struck in this balance on Ho Chi Minh? As with most world figures, his success largely defies rational explanation, filled as it is with the implausible. We've noted his several major characteristics of his personality. He was a wanderer, a searcher, as such a survivor. He was uniquely but not ideologically educated. He was a skilled organization man. Much of his credit for his success goes to his Vietnamese-ness, being acutely sensitive to the national consensus of his countrymen. He recognized the centrality of image in modern life and at all times projected the correct one, a benevolent uncle come to put things right. He maintained a clean background, or at least an unknown one, when virtually all other Vietnamese leaders were being tarnished. Much of his success must be credited to his personal qualities, self-discipline, asceticism, selfless dedication, his immunity and indifference to the lures of nepotism, high living, and corruption. Finally, he had a large share of a gambler's success, or joss, which the world calls luck. It seems reasonably clear that history will judge the success of the Vietnamese communist movement was a product of superior organization and correct leadership. There would probably not have been such a success without the unique contributions of Ho Chi Minh. All right, next week I'll go on to other names on the list. I think you have that Carnot thing. You might do some research on that. Any other questions? Anybody want to raise the subject of term paper?
Where are those midterms? You know, the midterm exams? Take numbers?
Yeah, well, I haven't written it yet.
Okay, but do you, like, the next 2 weeks or so?
Yeah, we'll get it one day and then we'll get the next. I mean,
we only get 2 days.
It's like an exam.
Yeah.
You could do it in class if you want,
okay.
Or you can take it home.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you said strategy, you meant military strategy.
No, political strategy.
Oh, you did?
Diplomatic strategy.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't understand because.